The F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program has two new problems to deal with. Stars and Stripes reports the program's manager, Lieutenant General Christopher Bogdan, tells a House Armed Services subcommittee his office wants to make the 5.5-pound helmet that the pilots that fly the aircraft wear about 6 ounces lighter to prevent pilots that weigh less than 136 pounds from having their necks snap if they have to eject the aircraft. The other problem is that one of the international partners that was committed to buying the aircraft looks like it's going to back out. New Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's campaign platform included canceling Canada's participation in the F-35 program. Richard Abulafi is Vice President for Analysis at the Teal Group. Richard, it's great to talk to you as always. Thank you for coming on the program today. Is this a big deal that one of the 9 countries that supported the F-35 up till now is going to back out of it? Thanks for coming on, Richard.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back on, Francis. You know, I think it would have been a much bigger deal, say, 2-3 years ago before this program was where it is today in terms of its relative commercial market success. I mean, what really matters for the production ramp certainly is foreign country participation. And the countries that really matter, basically Australia, South Korea, Japan, Britain, Italy, really sort of the core of the F-35 international community right now. Canada would have been icing on the cake, basically, for about 6 years, about 10 planes per year on top of the other 150 or so per year they're ramping up to. So definitely would have helped the program economics, but I don't think it's crucial to the program by any means.
And Canada's been shaky on this aircraft for a couple of years. Stephen Harper, the outgoing prime minister in Canada, according to a report from an Australian news source, said that Canada would buy 65 of the jets overall, but that they had put their program on hold, their participation in the program on hold, because some groups in Canada had expressed some of the same concerns about the aircraft program that we've seen here in the States.
You know, I think in a lot of ways this was more of a referendum on Canada's position in terms of defense and foreign policy than it was about the airplane or about anything else. You know, this is the exact plane they should buy, the F-35, if they're going to take part in coalition warfare with NATO partner countries. But if they're just looking for some kind of air sovereignty machine, then the Super Hornet or something will do just fine. And they've made the decision under the incoming prime minister to basically move towards more of a national defense role and less of a global partnership role. As a matter of fact, the very same day that Trudeau announced the F-35 decision, he also announced that they'd be withdrawing from the ISIS bombing campaign. So I think that's really sort of the connection there.
As we look at these connections, not just in the F-35, but we mentioned before we went on the air an interesting nuance that I hadn't considered, and that there are actually 3 parts to global partnerships like this. Review those for the audience the way that you did for me, Richard.
Well, there's domestic politics, and that could mean anything from industrial participation to how the country's leader positions himself. There's the plane itself, of course, and its relative technical merits as a warfighting machine, and, of course, the risks associated with its acquisition. And then finally, there's foreign policy. How are you going to use the plane? And here, I think the big change with Canada was that foreign policy aspect. How are they going to use their fighter? And Trudeau's vision of how he uses the Royal Canadian Air Force is very different from Harper's. Harper was very much a pro-U.S. ally, get out there and be part of peacekeeping and coalition warfare campaigns.
Do we have a sense of where some of those other factors lay with some of the other partners for this aircraft right now? I mentioned that the news report that I saw came from an Australian news source. They've had a change in prime ministers there as well, but that was different because that was from what they call down there a spill. The same party maintained power, just a different leader.
Yes, that's right. But the most important thing about Australia is that third aspect, the foreign policy aspect, they don't have the luxury of, well, being in North America and just basically being able to say, hey, we're maintaining our national airspace and nothing more. We'll intercept any Russian bombers that get too close, but don't count on us for more. Australia, of course, is right near China and the South China Sea and is quite mindful from historical experiences about the dangers of complacency. And that's why they're so keen on maintaining their strategic alliances. And as part of that, they view the F-35 as part of that. In other words, for the same reasons that Canada was at risk and obviously has left the program, I don't think Australia will.
Richard Abulafi of the Teal Group is looking at the F-35 program in light of the Canadian Prime Minister, newly elected Justin Trudeau, saying that Canada will withdraw from the F-35 program. The Australian change, the Canadian change, what does it say about the maturity of the program, in your view, that it can continue to take hits? I mean, this is a hit, regardless of the size of that hit. And I mentioned the helmet problem that we're learning about just within the last week or so. What does it say about the maturity of the program that it can take hits like this and continue where another program might have been lethal, some of these?
Well, certainly at an earlier stage in the program, there were doubts about whether or not it would be able to ramp up, either for economics reasons or for technology reasons. But here you are, you know, you've got well over 150 aircraft out there, and we're in final production or what have you. So it's become a far more established program, and you know, over 200 funded. I mean, it's clearly got some technical issues, but nothing that can't be dealt with. It's far closer to being a mature aircraft. The only question is it a product at a price that people want to pay relative to what they're going to use it for, which, of course, is the problem any fighter aircraft has had in history. Is this good value for money, basically? And there's still some debate out there. Now, among the F-35 user community, so far, really, Canada is the only sign of trouble. If anything, you've got other countries, potential market countries, that because of world events might be swayed into the F-35 camp. So, for example, most notably Finland, because of their strategic situation.
That's where I wanted to go next, which is, as the program matures, is there potential for more countries to want to get in on it rather than to avoid it, as Canada appears to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the problem for the F-35, from my standpoint, has been less about the technical merits of the aircraft. It's a good plane. It's more been about the price tag. Is it worth it? And certainly what hits the Canadians is that, you know, the Super Hornet is more digestible. It's about half the price. Why not go with that? Other people are, however, clearly making the decision that, yeah, it is worth it. And there are countries, particularly in the Middle East, that would absolutely love to have it now, but for political reasons can't. So, in other words, you go 4, 5, 6 years out, and I think the international market becomes a very different place.
With the helmet situation that I mentioned, is there a limit as to the number of problems that a program can sustain before political will really dissipates, or have the developers of this program done such a good job of making sure that the industrial base for it is spread out wide enough that that's really unlikely to happen at this point?
Well, I think at this point it's partly about the industrial base, but the far bigger issue is that, frankly, the Marines have absolutely no alternative. They lose the ability to use about 11 amphibious assault ships without this aircraft, and the Air Force, too, really has no choice. It's the Navy is the last aircraft, the last service to not have a choice. To still have a choice when it comes to aircraft, because they're still procuring the Super Hornet and Growler series. And they have been sticking with that program as a sort of second source. In other words, we've kind of burned all of our bridges from a tactical aircraft procurement standpoint, and the F-35 is pretty much the only game in town from 2 of the 3 air services.
Richard, excellent insight as always. It's terrific to have you back on the program today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Francis.